This case for argument, Greenblatt v. Resource Technology Corporation, Mr. Jordan. Mr. Jordan, where are you?
Good morning, Your Honors. Gregory Jordan on behalf of the appellants. Morning, counsel. Your Honors, we have a couple issues here to deal with. The primary one, I believe, is the interplay between abandonment and rejection of executory contracts. The appellees would like to read.
I didn't understand the transaction here. So your clients want to prevent this this deal between the bankrupt and what, Chastang, is that it? They have some contract which the trustee accepted.
Your Honor, there was a contract between the debtor, the estate, and Chastang. And there was various problems between the parties. There was litigation with regard to the contract. Our client had a security interest in the contract and a second interest in the gas collection system. There was a question as to who caused the problems with the contract. Our client
was an executory contract.
Yes, it was.
Right.
It was an executory contract. The trustee, as a part of his litigation, determined at first that he wished to settle with Chastang. Our clients went to the trustee and offered him a better deal, at least a better deal in the trustee's mind. And that involved abandonment and assignment of causes of action.
But why didn't the trustee then simply refuse to accept the contract?
Why didn't the trustee reject the contract?
Right. Because you were offering him a better deal than the contract, so why didn't he reject this?
Well, I think a part of the strategy was to have the contract go from...
Whose strategy?
I think our client's strategy was to have the contract go from the debtor in possession to the debtor, which in my mind would not be an assignment, notwithstanding their brief to the contrary.
Now I'm lost.
Yeah. Okay. If the trustee had rejected the contract, your client wouldn't be entitled to any gas. Would just be rejected.
It would be rejected. It would be
right.
Breached.
So from your perspective, the only way your proposal would make any sense is if the contract is reaffirmed.
Abandoned. Not reaffirmed.
First it had to be reaffirmed.
Then if it were abandoned, that would just be breach. I don't know how any entitlement comes to your hands if the contract is abandoned.
Your Honor, it wouldn't be reaffirmed. It would be abandoned under 554.
But you're assuming that this takes us to the issue. Section 365 requires executory contracts either to be reaffirmed or...
assumed or rejected.
Rejected, yeah. And there are a number of procedural protections that 365 then spells out depending on what is done. And you want to sort of do an end run around those things by going straight over to 554.
Well, I'm not sure I'd characterize it as end run. I would say that we would look at the economics of the situation and we would say that we're better off using 554.
But that's what I'm trying to understand. I don't understand the transaction. So you say somehow if the contract is rejected, you don't want the contract rejected. You want it abandoned. But how do you benefit if it's abandoned rather than if it's rejected?
If it's abandoned, it's not breached.
What does it mean to abandon a contract? I don't understand. What does it mean to abandon a contract?
Simply means
under a contract, you have obligations, don't you? How can you abandon your obligations under the contract?
Well, what the estate is doing is saying it looks at the standards and the burdens, and it says, I am going to take this contractual right and abandon it and then it would go from the debtor in possession to the pre-petition debtor.
But how is that different from rejection? I don't understand that.
Because rejection says the contract is breached, and no one's going forward with this contract.
Abandonment is saying, outside of the bankruptcy context, if I have a contract with you to sell you 1,000 widgets, and I announce I'm abandoning this contract, you would say that I have breached it because I haven't delivered the 1,000 widgets. And inside the bankruptcy context, there are provisions for how you allocate those performance responsibilities, whether it's a duty to perform, you know, a delivery of goods or a duty to collect gas or a duty to build something or whatever it is. I mean, the inside bankruptcy idea of abandonment isn't as dramatic a deviation from the non-bankruptcy context, I think, that as you're saying.
I think what you're stuck on is the concept of the term abandonment and the effect versus what the real effect of abandonment is.
Well, but if I'm
think
also
of something
stuck
as being
on the
abandoned,
idea that
I think of left and forgotten.
Well, but you can't just do that with contracts. And the reason 365 is out there is to protect various other parties for the movement of this contract from one entity to the next.
Well, that's an interesting point.
One is inclined to ask why you think United Airlines didn't just abandon its collective bargaining agreements with its unions.
Because
all these problems, it could have abandoned its collective bargaining agreements, could have abandoned its pension plans. It's not the way things work in bankruptcy.
There's a reason why they didn't abandon them as opposed to seeking to reject it, and that is that 365 puts a cap on damages and 554 does not. And so the trustee had to look at the economics of our transaction saying even without this cap on damages, as they point out in their brief, there were substantial damages in terms of costs, in terms of administrative claims, in terms of the note, in terms of the attorney's fees, and taking all that together, the trustee still felt that he got a better deal by saying, all right, I'm not going to take the cap on damages that United Airlines, being a rational party, said I want. They said, even without that cap on damages, I am going to go ahead and I'm going to abandon this back to the debtor, the pre-petition debtor, and I am going to take what I get from Banco and Chipleys and Leon Greenblatt, because in the end, I am, as a fiduciary of the estate, better off.
But
obviously,
but
the trustee isn't taking this lightly.
No, I mean, no one's taking things lightly, but the fact is 365 is worried about the position of the other party to the contract. That's what your scenario doesn't seem to take into account at all. Maybe it's looking at the debtor in possession. I guess it's now this thing's been now transformed to a Chapter 7. Is that correct?
Yes, I was going to mention that.
Yeah.
But the other
part
of the contract is... Can I reserve my rebuttal time,
yeah,
or would you like me to go forward?
Feel free. I mean, it's a concern of mine, but you can address that.
Go ahead. Answer the question.
Okay. I'm sorry.
My concern is how your position protects the position of the other party to this abandoned contract.
My position is that parties to contracts protect themselves. It is not my responsibility to protect the appellees, no more than it is my responsibility to protect Jewel when I go to the Jewel. My job is to go and work on my end of the contract and get the benefits and do what I'm supposed to do, which is including I give Jewel money. I am concerned in some sort of societal sense that everybody's fair, but I've got to do what I can do in terms of the four corners
right.
of the contract.
I mean, it just seems to me
interests.
The bankruptcy code is not as indifferent to the position of the other party to the contract as you may be, but we can pursue this further.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Jordan.
Thank you.
Mr. Camilla?
Good morning, Your Honors. Phil Camilla for the co-appellee Chastang Landfill, Inc. The short answer to one of the questions that was raised is the abandonment of an executory contract is called rejection. And the bottom line is that the counteroffer that they proposed tried to do an end run around all the protections of 365 for the contracting and non-contracting part or the non-debtor contracting party to our client's detriment, and that was the fundamental reason why Judge Weedoff rejected that counteroffer.
Would you mind just ticking off 1, 2, 3, what you think the most important protections under 365 are? That this is an end run around?
Well, number one, the debtor has to cure past defaults, which is another way of saying to reaffirm the contract. Number two, they have to show adequate assurance of future performance, which was impossible here because they never performed in the past, and therefore if the past is any guide to the future, there was no way they were going to be able to accomplish that. With this particular contract, which was assumed in 2002, there is a provision, 365G, that allows the trustee to assign an assumed executory contract, mm-hmm. provided that the past defaults are cured and the assignee shows adequate assurance of future performance. There was not one iota of evidence that anybody who's going to be receiving this contract through this device of an abandonment was going to cure the past defaults or provide adequate assurance of future performance. In fact, as Judge Weedoff noted in his ruling, it was a mystery to who was going to be at the receiving end of the abandonment. The other point that I think
Chastain get out of this contract?
The intent of this contract, Chastain was going to get two things. Number one, landfills build up methane gas. If the gas is not collected, there's fugitive emissions go to the atmosphere, creating air pollution, explosion hazards, et cetera.
Yes.
RTC was going to install this landfill gas collection system and therefore capture and control the emissions. Instead of flaring the gas into the atmosphere, the gas would be sold for profit. The theory being that this gas has beneficial reuse, and Chastain was going to get a royalty. I believe it was a 10% royalty off of the sale of the gas. So two things, environmental protection and money, a revenue from the sale of the gas. Chastain never experienced any of those benefits.
I thought there were tax credits in there somewhere, too, that might have been driving this.
Right. The tax credits is a whole other area that is underlying this transaction that was not put in front of the court on the hearing. Bottom line is that under the tax code, those who collect and sell the gas can get a credit from their income. I believe the barrel of oil equivalent for the amount of landfill gas sold for beneficial use. Okay, so the entity getting that tax credit would be the gas collection company, RTC here, and the tax credit is interwoven into the whole controversy. But that's another benefit. Those credits would not be going to Chastain. This case is probably moot as well. I cannot overlook the fact that the transactions contemplated by the settlement have closed. Not only was a settlement...
So?
I don't understand why that moots the case at all. I can see that it might create, you know, debts of various kinds, unsecured claims or whatever, but I don't see why it moots it.
If there was simply
contracts closed, think of antitrust law. Mergers close all the time, and they're unclosed by antitrust. So the fact that a contract is closed is has nothing to say about mootness.
The analogy to a sale of assets, it's pretty closer, I believe.
So, assets are sold and then they're reclaimed. Again, think of antitrust.
Or a money payment is made.
Antitrust is about mergers and the sales of assets and undoing them and their consequences.
In the district court, the Greenblatt entities argued that they needed a stay because the transactions will consummate and the trustee will be unable to benefit from their superior offer.
Well, people say all sorts of things when they want a stay, but I think that
the district court granted the stay and said, Judge Kennelly said, well, won't this be moot? I raised the argument because I need to raise it, and I do think there's a good argument why it is moot. I understand that it's possible to perhaps unscramble the eggs, remembering, however, that ownership of the gas collection system and the scrubber, which cleans the gas, has been transferred to CSMG and Chastain, and the parties have been in a process of exercising ownership and control over those assets as if they were sold. The Judge Weedoff heard 2 days of evidence, concluded that the evidence overwhelmingly showed the contract was terminated or would be terminated. Mr. Greenblatt's lien rights, if any here, were dependent upon the contract. They're contingent. The contract is terminated or would be terminated in any subsequent litigation based upon the undisputed fact presented to the bankruptcy court that the completion date, the operational date of, under this contract, was not complied with.
No, I thought Judge Weedoff essentially found there was an overwhelming likelihood that it would be found that the contract had been breached, and therefore there wasn't really, and that was what would be led to the finding that there was no contract left that they could enforce.
Yes, yes, and the failure to meet the operational date, which was March 31st, 2003, was a termination event under the contract itself. And that's where the dispute arose, where we put RTC on notice of the termination. They sued, and this was settling that lawsuit where, as I said, Judge Weedoff concluded that the evidence overwhelmingly supported the fact that the contract was breached or terminated. I believe he used the word terminated. The 365F, I mean, I'm sorry, 365C can also cannot be ignored as well, because that provision says that for certain types of contracts, even if there is a plan assignment, or if someone wants to assign certain personal service contracts or contracts where the identity of the other contracting party is important to the transaction, that assignment should be barred or prevented. The bottom line is that what this alternate offer tried to effect was an assignment, if you will, under the guise of an abandonment to an entity that Chastag would not do business with. I don't want to ignore the possible application 365C here. I do think it applies and should operate to bar the assignment or the plan abandonment. The bottom line is that 365 sets forth a comprehensive scheme for dealing with executory contracts. The counteroffer was premised on avoiding those protections to the detriment of Chastang. Judge Weedoff found that counteroffer was illegal, could not be carried out. He found that the evidence overwhelmingly supported the contract termination and found that the settlement was in the best interest of the estate under the tests set forth in the DePoister decision and other decisions of this court in this district.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Focarola?
Good morning. Patricia Foucault on behalf of CSMG. I'm here for the limited purpose this morning of highlighting mootness as it relates to my client, which might answer some of your questions, what you raised, Judge Easterbrook. As this court stated in UNR Industries, there are two methods where this court can refuse to upset the settlement agreement. One, the inability to alter the agreement, or two, your unwillingness to alter it. I believe both methods apply here. If this court were to reverse the settlement agreement, the operating agreement between my client and RTC would be impossible to perform. As our brief highlighted, Mobil Gas, the company that purchases the gas from the Chastang site, requires an oxygen level of 0.2%. RTC never delivered gas of an oxygen level less than 1%. Thus, even if it ran through the scrubbers of my clients, there's not an oxygen level that is acceptable to sell. Secondly, this court should be unwilling to alter the agreement because of the innocent third parties. In Envirodyne, you found that you needed to take into effect the third parties. CSMG has entered into contracts with third parties, Dow Chemical, and is now selling gas at the Chastang site. This court to reverse the settlement agreement, CSMG would have to breach that contract. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Fakuo. And Mr. Jordan, how much time does he have? 2 minutes? Yeah.
First off, Your Honors, I agree with the statement that this is not unlike any other contract. The mootness seems to me to be more of a straw man. With regard to the issue of 365C and assignment, I would point out that if if counsel's position were in fact the law, then every transfer from a debtor in a Chapter 11 case into the debtor in possession or the debtor to the trustee would be an unavailable act because it would be an assignment. Because all we're saying here is the abandonment is from the debtor in possession to the debtor. That is in, if you look at the offer letter, which is in the record on appeal, it says the property goes from the debtor in possession to the debtor. Now, 365G says that an ipso facto clause, meaning that there is insolvency, is not something that you can bring up to cause a termination. But it doesn't say that an assignment would be an ipso facto clause. So if one were to follow his argument and agree with it, in every single case, a landlord or a tenant would be able to say, you can't go forward on my executory contract because by virtue of it going from the debtor to the debtor in possession, it is an assignment. I would also point out that 365A, right in the first part, right in the first line, indicates that the trustee or the debtor in possession may assume or reject. He does not need to assume or reject. Now, I will grant you that our clients were intelligent in terms of looking at the interplay between 554 and 365, but they shouldn't be. The fact that apparently it hasn't been reported before close from that. I think the reality is that you have to look at the two sections. You have to read them so that one does not overwhelm another unless that's the only possible thing you can do. And if you say that 365 overwhelms 554, then it calls into question the whole analysis in Qualitech, which I think is correct and which I think has added greatly to the practice and to the benefits that trustees and debtors in possession have. Similar
okay.
here.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Gordon.
You, Your Honor. Appreciate your time.
Court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.